a.m. tomorrow morning. So we'll get the last portion of Cheltenham covered by Kev. Get a couple of live action calls from him. And we'll just check in. We'll also, of course, you know, we're really not that far away from Royal Ascot as well in June. So Kev yesterday had the one that we liked at, I think, 6-1. He had a favorite win. He accepted the favorite's likelihood. And then he had a placement behind a short-priced favorite as well. So two winners and a nice placement. Another nice job by Kev on day two at Cheltenham. And we'll watch and we'll get some audio in today. So let me get that out of the way. Day three of Cheltenham races. Always fun. And, of course, tomorrow, you know, St. Patrick's Day, when I'll have to fish out that great picture of the leprechauns. If you've never seen it, it's hysterical. Tomorrow is the major insanity at Cheltenham. And let me let people know what's going on the network as well. This all coming right here at the top of the hour. We will, in this hour, give you a couple of things. Something very funny happened. If you listen to the weekend action from Vegas, the confusion, at least the confusion on my part, over the two Joe Paezes. That could be a movie. The two Joe Paezes. when I had not seen him on the stage, which is far enough away in the event center, so when the name Joe Paese went up as, you know, on the leaderboard, I assumed it was the one from Home Run Inn in Chicago, who's been a very successful contest player. And so when they were pronouncing it, when Brian Skirka was pronouncing it, he and called him Joe Peace. I said, well, wait a minute, it's Joe Paese. And he said, no, he told me it's Peas. Well, then I heard from Joe. It's a Joe that I also know, but I didn't make the association. He's going to join us in a little bit, in about 10 minutes. And we'll hear his story about his terrific performance in the NHC. Tremendous. Looking forward to it. Top 10 finish. There's a couple other people that I would love to talk to. And, of course, we'll also have another full conversation with Paul Kalia after his amazing run. $950,000 between the two. We absolutely got to get a visit in with George Novick. I thought George's story was amazing that we got, and we were very fortunate on Friday to kind of wander into it, because he Thursday wins the last chance, first chance, and then forges into the top 10. I'd love to talk to George. Joe ended up eighth, good for $75,288.50. George was sixth, $290, and he hits here for $85,000. But of course, he also won 53 or 54 on Thursday, so it was almost $140,000 prize for George Novick. And George owns horses. He's got horses now with Mike and Patty Farrow, and was in the barn with us with Gary for a long time. We run tomorrow, by the way. I'm excited to get Scherzando back. He runs in the nightcap tomorrow. The filly's delayed. Countess Constance, she's delayed a couple of weeks. She had a little kind of a kooky thing pop up. So she's going to miss a couple of weeks. And she was ready to enter. Kind of irksome. But listen, that's what it is. So Joe Peace is going to join us here first and talk about his experience in the NHC. Dr. Joel Politi. Dr. Joel, who, of course, you know from the outstanding success he's had, particularly with Tom Amos, Serengeti Empress, and more. He's got a wonderful story to tell regarding a current new runner and a initiative that he's done that you need to hear about. You may have seen there's actually a piece at Horse Racing Nation. So we will talk to Dr. Politi at about 9:40. Tony, I haven't actually officially connected to Tony, but I expect to talk to Tony. And I brought up yesterday the piece that Bill Finley wrote in TDN about Alex Cancheri and the potential and the interest, obvious interest and need to see if CTE, the brain injury syndrome, I think syndrome is probably a good word for it, was present and may have been part of the challenges that he was dealing with. The depression, et cetera, the self-harm, and ultimately taking his own life. And this is something Tony has talked about this, and you heard the reference by Lisa Lazarus yesterday with Heisa to working with the Guild on jockey health and welfare. Tony's been heavily involved in, you heard her reference, the baseline study, meaning having a evaluation, and I should let Tony delve into this, having a baseline that medical staffs can use to evaluate head injury cases and circumstances in riders, essentially having concussion protocols. So this is, I mean, it's not as if this topic has not been, I won't say front and center, but it certainly is a topic that has been known in the rider health and welfare community, you know, those that are committed to helping riders in this regard and monitoring their well-being. So Tony can address it because he's been involved in those studies. Speaking of jocks, I don't know if you saw that TC Stevens, Gary's son, is going to get his first call at Fairgrounds. This is going to come on Sunday. Motown Missile in race 6. He's been riding mornings and has actually been working out of the Brad Cox barn in terms of exercise riding, and has been on a lot of good horses in the Cox barn. Including Caravelle. He was Caravelle's exercise rider. But also Instant Coffee. He has exercise ridden Hit Show, Zozo, Strobe, Tappet's Conquest. So I'm sure the Stevens family is very excited. TC, I'll put that on the side so we can watch on Sunday. The weekend action is drawn. Kind of a little bit of a quiet weekend again, actually. It's kind of that lull in the schedule, and then from there on, starting next week at Fairgrounds, obviously, things will, and Turfway too, don't forget, next week, things will start to, you know, really accelerate toward classic season. And you know, not only, you got obviously the Ruby and Bourbonette. There's also the Texas, the big Texas bread card. I'm sure we'll talk to Nick about that next week. This weekend, it seems like, I guess, Oakland probably with the Essex and the Whitmore, if you haven't looked at those yet. Laurel's got some stakes. That means we'll talk tomorrow to Cali Francois. Gulfstream's got some action. It's kind of a meat and potatoes weekend. The Oakland stakes and the Oakland sequence is pretty good. That Essex, which of course is the next step toward the Oakland handicap. I mean, you want to talk about Captain Reno? Round up the usual suspects. Yeah, Silver Prospector, Vittorio, Rated R Superstar. Call Me Fast from Michael Pewich, who is a little emergent. Here's a four-year-old that is making his stakes debut. You know, it's so funny. We concentrate on last year's three-year-old stars and you know, stake types coming back as four-year-olds. Doesn't mean that there can't be horses like this. This is a dialed-in gelding that the late Glenn Todd, wow, the Glenn Todd bred. And he is emergent. Took a while to break his maiden, but he did it at Keeneland in the fall, and has had a terrific winter, back-to-back allowance wins under Cisco Arrieta for Pewich. And in fact, it's Michael's 2 for 27. He's got a bunch of seconds, actually, more seconds than I'm sure you'd like, but 6 seconds. But this horse has been key to him having a solid, you know, solid meet, and comes back in the Essex. It feels like a dangerous horse. There is a lot of pace presence, though, so he may find more company than he would like on the front end as he stretches out a little bit too. As I think he did go a mile on the 16th in the allowance win in January. Classic Causeway, this was the spot that Kenny McPeak chose over the weekend, shipping to Tampa for the Challenger. Necker Island is here for the ever dangerous Chris Hartman, stretching out after his seasonal debut, six-year-old. Forza D'Oro for Cox. Tawny Port for Cox. Coming out of kind of a blah effort at a short price in the Mineshaft. Keystone Field, Maker, out of the Razorback, non-factor. And then the Razorback winner for Lucas, who keeps popping up and winning stakes at, and of course, you know, Secret Oath, a big part of that. But the Razorback winner comes back in here with Christian Torres. Last Samurai drew outside, but it shouldn't hurt him, actually, and he's going to get pace. So a good addition of the Essex. And then on the sprint side, the Whitmore, Spankster for Lucas, making a stake/graded stake debut. Tejano Twist coming out of the King Cotton, miles ahead. Paul McGee shipping in from Fairgrounds. Edge to Edge, here's another Hartman stake debuter, a five-year-old competitive edge, kind of inching. This is interesting. This is not a typical Hartman type. This is a horse that he's had for an extended period and has really just slowly, slowly, steadily developed. Very interesting, actually. Going back to 21, I'm just looking at the past 12 efforts, but was in the 70s and the 80s as a you know, the upper level of the 80s last year. And from a five-start sequence, moved into triple-digit buyer land in his last two starts. This is kind of an emergent sprinter that's been a work in progress. Six-time winner. Edge to edge. Interesting. Peggy Thompson owns. Empire of Gold, who I'm a huge fan of, as you may know, going back to the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland, where I thought he had a big look for Terry Off and Decky Carroll. He ran well. He ran very well. Baytown Bear for Paul McEntee. Flash of Mischief for Broberg. I didn't see where Broberg ended up. Let's see. How did Carl end up in the... He ended up 177th with his first entry, and actually was not far off being a semifinalist. He 137.70, which is was a very solid number. So he was one winner really away from the bottom of the top 78, and then excuse me, and then he was $60.70 with his other one back in the pack, his second entry. But Broberg's a good contest player. Pirate Rick, who Norm Cash seems to enter on a weekly basis. He's better at six furlongs, but he's 0 for 2 in his tries at Oaklawn. Cogburn for Asmussen off the allowance win. Second off the layoff. Last seen before that in the Chick Lang. And Morello for Asmussen draws wide. His second start as a four-year-old. So two other four-year-olds. These on the certainly the sprint division can use all the fresh faces it can get. So very good pair of stakes at Oaklawn. Oaklawn will be, I'm sure, the major focus tomorrow. And, you know, one thing I should mention before I call Joe, the terrific, I don't know if I don't, do I have the, yeah, I do, actually. I think I do. Do I have the chart? Maybe I don't. From Oaklawn on Saturday. Terrific effort. I you know, was too busy with the broadcast to laud Scully's terrific pick in that maiden race. Interlock Empire. I imagine a bunch of you went to town on that. Terrific push by Scully to sniff that horse out. And I certainly mentioned it, you know, during the coverage. But 12 to 1 morning line, and then gets ignored and floats to 17 to 1. This was a McPeak for the Mackens, Lucky Seven, who have really had some nice success with fairly modest purchases, which is the kind of a McPeak specialty. This was 190,000. This was not a bargain, quote unquote, you know, under 100 or the like. But this was a horse that had stepped forward in the last start and absolutely sniffed out beautifully by James. So good job. Scully actually is off today, tomorrow, and through the weekend. He's taking a few days. I forget what he said he was doing, but he's off. Interlock Empire, 37.40. That'll clean up a lot of miscues for players, right? Yeah. So, all right. The let me get Joe in here and talk about his, speaking of contests, there were a bunch of good plays at Oaklawn over the weekend, and I'm not sure how many of them that Joe might have taken part in. Joe, peace. Good morning. Congratulations on a tremendous NHC effort.
Thanks, Steve. Really appreciate that. Really appreciate it. It was a great time.
Well, you laughed with me. I got a big kick out of this because I just when I kept seeing your name on the leaderboard, I was thinking, Paese from Home Run In. He's a terrific player, but then it turns out it's you who I know for a different reason.
That's right. You know, it's funny because I didn't know until I listened to the replay yesterday, and I'm thinking, Steve's got the wrong Paese.
Well, why does your family not pronounce it Paese?
It's funny. It goes to my mom. My mom's 93 years old, and she's not the Italian half. My dad was, obviously. And she always would say Paese, you know, and just to make it easy, you know, Americanize it, if you will. And that's sort of how it is. And most people, unlike you, don't realize it's an Italian name. So it's, I guess, Steve for ease.
All right. Well, actually, it's good because it distinguishes you from the other Paese.
There you go.
Who's a paisan, obviously, and may really be a paisan.
That's right.
Well, talk about your weekend because if I'm not mistaken, mm-hmm. I think what late on Friday did you start to forge into range?
No. I had a little over $50 at the end of Friday.
Okay.
And yeah, so I was, you know, Steve, unlike my first year, which was last year where I was a goose egg, I felt really good having 50, let me tell you. So yeah, it was not a bad first day. And I actually passed on a couple, you know, lower priced horses on Friday, which, you know, I sort of regret looking back, but you can't do that. But it set me up pretty well for Saturday because I really like Saturday's card and early Sunday's card. And to your point before I jumped on, Oaklawn was my key. Oaklawn ended up being my key on Saturday. So that's how I approached it.
And when did you start to catch fire and start to, you know, because at whatever point I saw the name, either way, I said, oh, wow, here's, you know.
On Saturday, I hit, there was a 10-to-1 shot at Jamie Neff's horse at Laurel, the one horse, and you even commented on it, I think, in the replay show. It was the apprentice jockey was on the horse, and he was 10-to-1, so I hit that. Then I was really waiting for the sixth race at Oaklawn, which was I think I told you the last time I was on, I really focus on maiden races and turf races. And, you know, the fact that Santa Anita canceled really, really hurt me because I did a lot of work, and I'm sure a lot of other people did on the Santa Anita card. So I was waiting for a Lucas horse to run back out of a maiden special weight race. And I knew he wasn't going to be a big number, but I wasn't sure. So it ended up, he floated down. He's 4-to-1 in the program, floated down to 5-to-2. I bet him. He won pretty easy. Gaffleone came in to ride, and as a result of that, there was a horse in the split race in the eighth that I really wanted to bet back that came out of that same race, and that was the McPeak horse, who was the 12 horse, and he was 17-to-1, and Stevie won by a city block. I think he won by 10 that day at 17-to-1 on Saturday. So that's what really set me up. That jumped me from, I think I was in, you know, the low 200s. That jumped me the whole way into like 35th on Saturday. So that really set me up then for Sunday.
Well, and I just was, it's so funny that's the case that you hit Interlock Empire. James Scully gave out Interlock Empire on the show
really?
Friday. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't listen to the show.
Yep.
How about that?
He gave out Interlock. That was his, you know, one of his prime plays for the weekend. Crazy, 37-40.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm a trip handicapper. I told that before. I am not a speed figure guy. Never have been, never will be. But if you watch those two, if you watch that race, and I thought it was a key race, and it just happened to set up. And you know that you got to get lucky, right? If you got horses you're waiting for coming back. And when Lucas's horse won as easy as I thought he did in the sixth race, then I was all over the 12. And I didn't expect him to win by 10 lengths. But so that just, and Steve, I was seeing things. You know, I was seeing everything on Friday, Saturday. Everything that I played actually had a run in them. So, and I didn't have any bad breaks Saturday and Sunday. No one got shut off. But every horse I played had run, and sometimes that's the way it works, right? And to win these kind of contests, that's what you have to have.
When it came to Sunday and the semifinal, what was your thinking, and you know, kind of walk through that portion?
Yeah, so you know, with only 10 picks, and again, this is only my second year, so really, you know, I tell you what, I learned a lot the year before. And I think it set me up well that I wasn't in a hurry, right? But I really liked a couple plays early and on Sunday, but none of them won. But they all had run, right? At a Tampa Bay, Gulfstream, and they all had run. They were all good prices. So I was still seeing things. But my key play, and you're going to laugh at this, was the Alligator Hunter on Sunday. It's a horse that I have bet at Minnesota several times. He had one run at Tampa. I thought it was a setup race for this race. And then when they made a jockey change, and I don't know why, to Ferrer, I knew he was going to be close to the lead. And that was my only concern. So I know when Ferrer got on, I was going to be outside the favorite. I didn't think he'd be 17-1. But when I saw that number, I said, the guys at my table, and this is the second year we sat together, and a great group, I said, I've been waiting for this horse, and he won pretty easy. So that jumped me then into the top 10. It jumped me to 6. And I had a couple other plays that I liked from that point, but nothing, not a whole lot, but it really came down to that last race at Gulfstream. The very last race on Sunday to get to the final table, I was between two horses, both of them Woodbine synthetic horses that were running. And I went to the recency edge with Gaffleone, and thank God I did. He runs, he ends up taking the lead mid-stretch, loses, but gets me place money. It kept me in, the top 10. Yeah.
You were 35th going into Sunday.
Yep. Right. Right.
Well, that gets you into the final table, and what, I mean, what are you thinking, you know, when you realize, you know, you get that place price and you say, now I'm within shot, right? And you know you're going to bring home, you know, at least a big five-figure check no matter what.
Steven, I'm going to be dead honest with you on this. You know, I did a lot of things right. This is the thing I did wrong. I did not look at those races to the degree I looked at everything else. Yeah, I scanned them. So when reality hit, which was, you know, at the end of the semifinal, now I'm looking at the three guys at the table, and I'm like, man, I didn't do near the work for this final table that I did for the previous 2.5 days. So I knew I was up against it a little bit, but I had looked at the entire Oakland card. So the very first race of the final table, I liked that horse a lot. Devil's Tower. I liked that horse a lot. So I was cool there. So I was already had that play, and I was, you know, really scurrying, quite frankly, looking at, and because I'm a replay guy, I'm a trip guy. And so I was a little up against it. I made one bad decision. I changed my mind on the Santa Anita down the hill race. I was between the one and the winner. And I took the one horse instead of, and that cost me two spots when I look back on it. I would have never caught, I would have never got to fifth based on the play, what I could see looking out. So it cost me two spots that I probably would have ended up sixth. I ended up eighth. The only other play I really had, I didn't have the other Oakland, the first time starter at Oakland. And I know you commented on that. I think it was Von Hamel's horse. I went to the outside horse who had the lead mid stretch. So again, I got run, but he went too fast. But the Golden Gate race, the second to the end, I thought the two horse was a legitimate play on the rail, and he was 12-1 and he got in all kinds of trouble mid stretch. I don't think he would have won the race. But so that's where it was, Steve. I really didn't like anything other than the very first final table race But, you know, you live and learn. You know, it's one of those things where I should have been prepared and I wasn't, quite frankly.
Yeah, that's interesting because I did, in fact, ask, who was it? It must have been John. Maybe, was it John? Before the final table came about, we were talking. I put up those pictures with everybody. In fact, last night there were a couple of players, and I asked if they had looked, and John said, "Yeah, that he had handicapped those, you know, the final table races as well." So I guess that that's what this. A lot of times, this is accrued knowledge and experience. You know, one of the things that we hear so often is coming out, especially if you're from the East Coast, coming out, you know, early in the week, Monday, Tuesday, and getting your sleep adjusted. And frankly, this situation with the time change,
yeah.
That absolutely shook some people up.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I never had that. I'm like you. I'm up at 4 or 5 o'clock. Doesn't matter every day. And so when I get to Vegas, I'm up at 2 o'clock. And so I start looking at replays.
Yep.
You know, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, and that's just my MO. I just made a tactical mistake not looking at those seven races. And
amazing.
But like you said, you know, it's the second year. I learned a lot from the first year for sure. And my table, same four guys from last year, you know, Frank Peros, who sits at the table, he made the final table last year. So it was his first year. He made the final table, won 100,000. He was in fourth. So learned a little bit from him. Colin, the year before, I think cashed at like 20 something. So the four of us, you know, I had a little bit of help there from those guys and they were great. And we get along really well. But yeah, I just made a tactical mistake there. Now, again, I look back on it. I don't know if I really liked anything in those races other than the very first one, as I mentioned. But you know, hopefully I get another shot, Steve, but you don't know.
How did you qualify this year? And
this is hilarious because, you know, I won the big challenge 2 years ago.
Yep.
So get back from Vegas because it was the end of January, the very first contest the next weekend, I qualified.
That's great.
It's crazy. So it's like, okay, I got to wait 14 months, but that's all right. I'm already in. And yeah, it was really bizarre how that all worked. And again, as I said to you on the text, you know, I got to give you credit because I don't think I would have ever really gone for this other than when I won the challenge. I mean, Steve, it's a great time. Let's be honest. I mean, everybody out there wants to be there. You do a great job. I really think the whole setup and the way, and everybody has said it, the way that staff takes care of you, it's just a great event. It really is. It's just a lot of fun.
It's just unique, too, because it, we certainly respect, you know, any of the live money events, mm-hmm. and you know, they're great, and it's a whole different kettle of fish. But anybody with the bankroll can come and participate in those. This is different. And just the fact, you know, that Brian Troop, for instance, a prior champion and a final table finalist in as well in 2015. So somebody that's, you know, been a steady presence on the, you know, on the scene. The other, you know, Jose Arias, who went into the Hall of Fame Saturday or Sunday night, didn't qualify. That, you know, that reality that you have to earn your way in. There's no free passes, and it's not a question of how much you know, how much money you have. That part of it. Makes it and should be sacrosanct. I mean, that's what makes it unique.
No, I agree. I play some live money, not that much, but I think that is what makes it different, right? You've got to earn your way in. But I will tell you, between the end of the semis to that final table, Steve, I was a little nervous.
Well, why not?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you be?
It's cool. It's cool though. You know, you got, you know, not, it's, yeah, it's about the money. It's not about the money, all that, you know, it's cool having $65,000 in your pocket and saying, hey, lighten up. I mean, that's a free roll from there, right? So you go and hope that you have the right strategy. But yeah, I have no regrets. I mean, I had, as quite frankly, Saturday and early Sunday, and I looked back. My average win mutual that I played, or odds that I played, was right between 9 and 10 to 1. So if you look at the 46 races, my average bet was right around 9 to 1. So if I hit if I hit between 20 and 25%, based on that, it really gets me to the number I was at. So I was seeing things pretty well, as I said. So I mean, and that's all you can ask for. I mean, so be hot on those days and get to where you need to be. So it was a great experience. Great experience.
Well done. And the focus then immediately turns to next year. Now you got to go through the whole process again.
That's right. That's right. But that's all right. You know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun. We'll get there.
Remind everybody a couple of things, where you're from, what you do during the week, and those kinds of things.
Yeah, I'm actually grew up in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I actually live in Middletown, which is a town not that far outside of Harrisburg. But I've been in banking my entire career. I run a trust and wealth management group for one of the best community banks, Mid-Penn Bank. And I've been doing this my entire career. So when I got out of college, which is, I went to Shippensburg University. I'm a certified financial planner, but I've run trust departments. That's been my background, again, my entire year, which is now, you know, close to 40 years. So that's what I do. I mean, it's not a great time right now with what's going on with the banks, but, you know, I've seen this before. You get through it, but, that's what I've been doing, as I said, for about almost 40 years. I've got, you know, married, I have three kids, three grandchildren. And as you know, I got a place in Chincoteague, Virginia, which is an interesting little getaway spot on the East Coast. And, as you found out that last summer, correct?
Yeah. Too much fun. In fact, I was telling somebody about it. Who was I telling this the other day, and it came up the trip to one of the people at Woodbine had a conversation yesterday, and Lindsay Bax, and she is trying to plan a trip to get to the Saratoga, and I said, you know, coordinate so that you go to maybe Haskell and that kind of thing. She wants to see what's going on at, some of the Eastern American tracks. And I said, explain the whole trip to her, that what we did with Haskell to Virginia. And of course the trip out, they had an amazing couple of days, then swing around to Colonial and then up, to Chincoteague, which was wild.
Anyway, that is wild. It is, Steve. It's just a very laid back. You caught it on the day that it's crazy, right?
Yes.
Most of the time it's very laid back, and it's just it's an old fishing town that, you know, Chincoteague oysters. I'm sure people have heard that. So, and my wife's family has been going down there for almost 50 some years, when it was basically nothing other than, not that it's a lot right now, but it was basically a fishing town and a little island. One of the prettiest beaches that you will find on the East Coast, above the southern beaches. It is absolutely pristine because it's the National Wildlife Reserve that separates the beach and the island. So there's no houses, no nothing. It's just it's very pristine and very beautiful.
Well, I can attest, and even swung through Ocean City and had a crab stop, which was out of this world. Taught Tina how to crack crabs, and outstanding. Well, Joe, I appreciate this. I'm delighted for you, and
thanks, Steve.
Always good to come back to the family with. With a fat check, it justifies all the, you know, all the weekends and all the angst.
Yeah, it's funny, and I'll end on this. My oldest said to me, "Well, Dad, I guess now you're officially ahead from when you started doing this 40 years ago. I sure hope so.
Well, that was the greatest line ever with the late Dan Borislav. When Borislav, when I had Dan on, after he hit he swiped that pick six, the rainbow, the jackpot, and I said, Dan, where does this put you? And he says, it might get me even for life. He went $3 million, and he wasn't convinced that it was even. Then poor Dan, then passed away a week later. Yeah. Craziness, but that was. I'll never. I wish we still had that. Dan, does this get you even? Maybe. Close. Close.
That's too good.
Great job, Joe.
Good. All right, thanks, Steve.
Talk soon. Day. You got it, bye. Joe Pace. Everybody, and what a great run. The part about him and Joe and I don't want to say the real Joe Paese, but the more the more Italian version, I guess, or the more trying to reach Dr. Politi, please. You bet. Joe Politi is going to join us next, and I guess we got the nursing staff. He's literally peeling away for just 2 seconds from his morning, and he's got a great story to talk about here about Camp Aquila, and he told me about it. Maybe a month ago, give or take, and. The namesake Philly down at Fairgrounds, and Joel is using this as a horse for a cause, which is a something actually we should probably do more of, all of us, when we can, peeling off revenue. So don't know if we do we have Doc yet? Joel? Nope, not yet. Okay.
Hello?
There he is. Dr. Politi. Joel, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. I'm glad we got a chance to do this. I saw that Teresa Gennaro wrote a piece about Camp Aquila. You told me about the idea and what was happening earlier this year, and the timing is perfect to kind of flesh this out and let people know what you're doing.
Well, so as you said, Horse Racing Nation, they wrote an article, and I read it. It came out yesterday. It's a really well-written piece. I really want to compliment Teresa on her writing. She interviewed just all the connections, and she did a good job of telling the story. But I have four daughters, and my youngest daughter, all my four daughters are really great. My youngest daughter is really special. She's on the autistic spectrum, and she is loved and endeared by her three older sisters like you couldn't believe. And she just had issues growing up. To relate the story and make it a little more personal, anybody that has ever had experience with some kids on the spectrum, they're just sometimes a little bit different. And so as they grow up, they just aren't necessarily mainstreamed or accepted, and they have a lot of social issues. So if you met my daughter, you would think she's a really funny girl, and maybe she's a little quirky, and she's super personable, but she also just doesn't quite fit in always. And so when she was about 10 years old, my wife found this camp. It's called Camp Aquila, and it's in Thetford, Vermont, which is literally the middle of nowhere. There's no cell service, and it's up in the mountains, and it's really what you would envision a summer camp being. It's a camp for kids that's on a little lake. It's got all the things that kids go to summer camp that you would imagine them doing, archery and hiking and ropes and arts and crafts and big campfire and songs. But the magic of this camp is it's run by two PhDs that are super high level and super benevolent people that founded this camp. And essentially it's a camp for quirky kids. And
So we found it for Nina, and she went there when she was 10 years old. And it's really made, she went there for 7 years. It really made a big difference in her. Every time she'd go to camp, she really fit in with all these other kids, and they all felt normal. And they employ counselors that are teachers or maybe college kids that want to be in special education. And they're really empathetic people, and they have a plan for all these kids, and they have goals and things they want to achieve, and they do ropes and high ropes. She's been to that camp every year, and every time she comes back, we're just amazed at just the change in her. And that camp is such a gift, and I don't think a lot of people know about it. And it's one of those things where, you know, it really makes a difference in people's lives. So she's been there for all these years. She's aged out of it. She's 18 now. But we were, you know, we every year, Tom, Amos, and I go to the sale and pick out babies. And we try and name them with some meaning. If you know some of my other horses, every horse, I could tell you a story on what the meaning of the name is. And so we were going through, and Nina graduated out of Camp Aquila. And I thought, you know, wouldn't it be really great to name a horse Camp Aquila, donate part of the earnings to them? Because the camp is expensive to go to. It takes a lot to run it. And they have a nonprofit that sets up scholarships for kids. So maybe we could give back to them. And so Camp Aquila, as she runs, or the horse Camp Aquila, every time she runs, we're going to donate some money back to the camp and hopefully send some kids to have a really great summer experience. But also, I thought, wouldn't it be great to just let people know about this wonderful camp? And maybe somebody that's listening today or somebody read that article knows somebody that's got a kid who would really benefit from going there, and maybe can change somebody else's life too. So it's a magical place, and it's run by people that are just incredible, from the directors, Debbie and Eric Sasson, all the way down to all the employees. And I have four daughters. My third oldest daughter, who's really special too, she was a camp counselor there for a summer, and, you know, lived it firsthand with Nina. And anyway, it's just a very touching place, and we're trying to do some good, spread the word a little bit.
Right on, right on Route 91, near the New Hampshire border, Thetford.
Yes, yeah, it's an idyllic place. I mean, again, I said it, but it's, when you go and see it, it's just, it's like something out of one of the movies that you watch about kids going to summer camp. Hmm. They're just treated like kids, and it's so great for this group of people.
Have you had a conversation at all with Johnny Tabota?
I have not.
Johnny out west, the San Francisco area, you know, who had the horse Autism Awareness, and does almost all of his horses have an autism tie-in, and you know, he's done similar things as well. So this is a terrific idea, and I'm actually surprised that there isn't more of it around the game either, Joel. It's really a natural, given, I mean, there's never a guarantee that you're going to get a good horse.
Right.
I mean, it's already a challenge to name them after, you know, family members. And then, you know, when you got to put them into a claimer, it's a problem.
It's good news, right? I mean, if I name a horse after my wife, it better be good. So
exactly, right? It's too funny. Well, and this one, you know, already a winner, which that goes a long way. Coming out of the race over the weekend, out of the try in the Black Cat, which Tommy won, right? I mean, Tommy, his other horse ended up.
Yeah, a girl named Charlie, yeah, came from off right off the pace, and really nice McLean's Music filly owned by Jerry Karim. That race, I think Tom and I both think Camp Aquila ran a great race. There was a fair amount of pace in the race. That fairgrounds course is so goofy that I don't think anybody can make any statements about anything. Time, what their splits are, even the sheets numbers. I don't know what anything means out of there, you know? And so there was on paper a ton of speed. She sat right on the speed. The other speed horses all faded. She looked like a winner to me at the, top of the stretch. She kind of made that move and opened up a little bit. And I thought, man, she's going to win. And that would be just so great. And And then she got caught. She got beat 2.5 lengths. It's not like she ran a great race. And look, I mean, she's a New York bred, and so the plan will be to bring her back up when the Fairgrounds meet ends with, you know, Tom will bring her back up with all of his other horses at Churchill, and we'll regroup and point to a turf race somewhere in Kentucky probably, and then try to get her into some New York bred races as the year goes on. But she got that New York bred, you know, special allowance essentially that she's, you know, eligible for those races. And I didn't see a New York bred 3-year-old turf stake on the schedule yet, but I mean, I know there will be at some point. So I'd really love to, you know, take her there. And again, I root for all my horses because I'm competitive like everybody. I want to win and do well. And but I really, there are certain ones you're like, man, I really hope this one can just carry the flag for a while and spread the word and, you know, generate some good talk about things. And, you know, one thing that I learned about having a child on the spectrum is that I look at the world through a completely different lens now than I ever did, in that everybody's got their issues. And before, when I was a young, you know, typically stupid male, I would look at people and just think things. And, you know, I have a much kinder heart about everybody, in that everybody's got a story, and we should be compassionate and kind to people just in how we look and judge and think about everything. And I hope everybody would be that way with my daughter when they're interacting with her and with other people. And so, anyway, if we can spread some word and love with a horse like this, you already touched on it, but I think in horse racing, we have the opportunity to mix different worlds. And why wouldn't we, you know, name a horse after somebody, donate some money to charity, raise awareness for a cause, but also all those people in Camp Aquila, they're all following the horse, and that's mixing worlds. That's a great thing.
Well, we saw, you know, we saw how successful, and there's been plenty of examples of this that, you know, that have resonated over the years. And I mean, as mentioned, the whole idea with that we saw with autism awareness, the horse itself. I mean, that and he became a stake horse for Johnny Tabota. It a good example. And Cody's Wish. This Cody's Wish. I mean, it's kind of a special circumstance and kind of an individual, but you know, that has the same connotation as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think again the idea of just, you know, promoting some awareness things and also cross pollinating worlds, you know. So I hope that again that she gets to have a good career that, you know, gets to spread the word, and somebody will be affected somewhere somehow by this, and we can all smile about that.
Dr. Joel Politi with us. It's already been a pretty solid year, and Camp Aquila part of the handful of wins already, and then there's the one that we know is going to win, and hopefully it trips the floodgates. Grapes for Eloise that we heard about going back to last summer, and that all of our listeners were following, Joel.
Yeah, so she's a horse I named after my dad with a long convoluted story that would take too long to tell, but I think she's probably one of our better horses. She had a slight setback, so she's on the mend right now, resting. She'll be back in training hopefully in the spring when we get up to Kentucky, and I have pretty high hopes for her. She ran a really nice Liam's Matt filly. I have another really nice Twirling Candy filly that we had to give time off, and she's back in training, Microbiome. She won first time out at Saratoga. We've been super patient with her, and Tom's got her training again. We have a couple other ones that are okay. And then I have the whole cadre of 2-year-olds coming up from Woodford, where they've been prepping. And all of those are undefeated at this point.
Well, how's the one that when I sat with you at Churchill and you bought at the sale? That was that was a riot.
That one's probably my favorite. That one's named No Risk It, No Biscuit. You know, They haven't. They've been like quarter mile breezes. I think that might be up to 3/8. So they're not. You don't really know how good they are. But we were just down there, Tom and I, visiting them a month ago, and she's grown. She's super impressive. Again, you know, that's the magic of owning baby horses, that you get to dream, and dreams are free. And like I said, they're all undefeated at this point. So.
Well, Joel, always rooting anyway for you. And this story, I'm going to send the link out right now to Teresa Gennaro's piece at Horse Racing Nation. And Oaks winning owner Politi races Camp Aquila for a cause. Continued success. Get back to patience, and congratulations on your daughter's graduation, and she's getting her medical assignment tomorrow.
Yeah, this weekend. We're driving to Charlottesville. My oldest is graduating from med school, but tomorrow is match day. So for anybody that's in the world of medicine,
yep.
All the kids submit they interview for everywhere, and she's going into plastic surgery, and I couldn't be more proud of her, along with all of my daughters. And anyway, tomorrow she finds out where she's matching in plastic surgery to do her 6-year residency. So, the family's making the trip, and we're all meeting there, except for one of my daughters can't make it, but 5 of the 6 will be there together. And we get to watch her open her envelope and see where she gets to go from here. It's very exciting. Good weekend.
Where is she hoping to? What's her first choice?
Well, she's got in her top 3 Northwestern, Ohio State, and Virginia, and probably family might be pulling for Ohio State. Although my second oldest daughter Leah lives in Chicago, so Northwestern will have a strong Politi contingent if she winds up there. So we'll see. I think she'll be happy to go anywhere. Honestly, those are all great programs. So.
Outstanding. Wow. Joel, delighted we could get a chance to connect here in the wake of the runner, and first and foremost, Camp Aquila. And put the link out there for everybody to read Teresa's piece. And I'll also find their website and let people, those that this might be a fit. For some people, right? You would think.
Yeah. I'll give you one more update that you probably would like. Serengeti Empress is doing great. She's got a yearling, Into Mischief, who is just awesome. And we gave her the year off last year from breeding, and she's back in full now to curling.
Wow.
So we're sitting on that.
Wow.
So, good stuff.
Very nice. Well, yeah. The Politi operation with Famous Amos at the helm, at the barn, doing good things. And Joel, applaud it, and I appreciate the visit. Talk soon. See you soon.
Okay, Steve, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Not at all. Dr. Joel Politi, everybody, and Camp Aquila. The website is simply Camp Aquila, AKEELA, CampAquila.com. Very simple. And where quirky campers thrive. that's a fun tag. I happen to know. I don't know why Tedford rings a bell, but certainly know that corridor up 91. Splitting Vermont and New Hampshire, but I knew immediately when he said Thetford where he was talking, on the way to White River Junction, and going up that direction. So here's the website here, Camp Aquila. Very good. Nice. Good job. All right, let's take a break. Come back, catch up with Tony. I want to talk about the CTE consideration and what Tony can impart on it, because he's been involved in concussion protocol, either studies or helping create the baseline information, and especially with the reference. I mean, obviously we've got the tragic circumstance involving the most recent incident with Alex Ganciari, but there's no way to know what other jocks have suffered this, you know, this way. So I want to see what Tony can tell you. All right. So Tony Black going to join us. Dave Hill. I guess I should mention, with Dave Hill visiting at 11, to give you some angles for the next, well, certainly the first 2 days, today and tomorrow, the first set of NCAA games, and then into, you know, into Saturday and Sunday. Dave may, you know, have some more, may have some teams that are prepared to go on a run. That's kind of the way to approach this. You know, look, you know, to the game beyond the first game. But you obviously have until tip-off of the first game today to join the At the Races Tourney Challenge. Let me find it and retweet that while we're doing some tweeting. And apparently, our stream company, this outage, this Verizon outage, I was not really doing anything online this morning. We've gotten into a habit of sleeping late, to be honest. The West Coast taking its toll on my sleeping habits. I told you, I slept till 11 on Tuesday, which was crazy, but we got home at 3:45 from the snow challenge across the Mass Pike. But slept till 7 today. It's kind of funny, you know, because it's 4 a.m. Between the West Coast, between the time I spent at Santa Anita and then a quick 3 days in New Orleans, but then back to Vegas, I pretty much had acclimated West Coast. So I wasn't online this morning, so I didn't know about all this. If this outage, you know, what's going on. But anyway, they've now moved our server, apparently, and so the show is streaming again for those that missed about 45 minutes, I guess, while the stream was down. All right? So anyway, I'll send the link out again. You got about 2 hours to sign up, and we got about 100 players already, which is typical. All right, so here it is. Sign up, play the At the Races 20 Challenge. Tony Black next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet into equine health and safety. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
Who are you betting on? How about an app created specifically for horse racing? Naira Bets. We specialize in thundering hooves, fist pumping, and boosting your bankroll with robust weekly promotions and offer betting tips from actual horse racing experts. Bet all day and night, nationwide. Get the action and thrill of horse racing with Naira Bets. $200 deposit match with promo Steve200. Visit NairaBets.com for details.
The Pons family's Country Life and Maryland Farms are the place for breeding and racing in the Mid-Atlantic. Country Life is nationally recognized for making stallions and curly stands, the Mid-Atlantic's leading first and second crop sires, Divining Rod by Tappan and Mosler by Warfront, as well as Friesian Fire. Maryland's 5/8 mile training track completes the full service facilities from the folding barn to the racetrack. Join the excitement of racing with Country Life Farm, where our partnerships can take you from beginning to winning.
Want to know a secret? The Massachusetts breeding program pays huge bonuses for finishing first, second, or third at any racetrack in the country. You didn't know that, did you? Massbreds get paid up to an additional 25% of their purse earnings for the owner and breeder and stallion owner and developer. It's the best